This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to another scintillating edition of Taking Aim. I'm Steve Woodward, joined as always by David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Mr. Woodward. Good morning, everyone.
Do we have some targets this week or what? Who knew that when we, after weeks of committee meetings and paying consultants, that we finally came up with the name of our program, Taking Aim, that it would be so ideally suited for the times in which we live?
Well, we have such a target-rich environment that, you know, rather than taking aim in the traditional sense, our logo is an area fire weapon. It's an atomic bomb going off.
Yeah, I almost feel like we should be filing for a hunting license or something. Of course, in a rhetorical sense, you know. Let's not get everybody's heads blowing up and driving off Midland Road and plowing into our longleaf pines or anything like that. But, well, of course, many of us as a civic duty, others because we didn't know any better, tuned in earlier in the week for Donald Trump's triumphant address to the joint congressional delegation, the members of the House as well as the members of the U.S. Senate, including our very own Thom Tillis and Ted Budd from North Carolina. And as you might imagine, the media and the Democrats, but I repeat myself, as our friend Chris Plant says, were frenzied up. And, you know, the problem with these speeches starting at 9 o'clock is that gives them all day long. It gives them 12, 14 hours or more to get themselves all spun up about how outraged and morally demented they're going to be the minute Trump opens his mouth. In fact, just the sound of the voice, Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States, was more than they could really bear, I think. And it just went downhill from there. Actually, as joyous as watching him enter the hall as president, the 47th president of the United States, watching his cabinet parade in, this group of media maligned people who are change agents, who are shaking up the status quo in the swamp. It was great to see them walk in one by one: Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Kash Patel, Pete Hegseth, Tulsi Gabbard, Pam Bondi, the rock-ribbed attorney general, and so on and so forth. They came in one by one, marching together with a common purpose under the 47th president of these United States. And we didn't get very far into the proceedings when suddenly there was a sense of unrest in the air, and rising to meet the occasion was 78-year-old Texas Congressman Al Green. I think there was once a semi-famous musician named Al Green.
Well, yes, not to be confused.
Let us not confuse that talented individual with this babbling zombie who represents a congressional district near Houston, Texas, which I like Houston because it's kind of close to the United States and one of the largest cities in the United States. Al got up and brandished his cane as if taking a page from the, 19th century U.S. House of Representatives, brandishing his cane. And, of course, the Democrats are all aging out, so they all have canes and walkers and ventilators and oxygen
There were quite a bit of canes on the Democrat side.
I mean, it is a medical device potpourri smorgasbord in the halls of Congress these days.
The world's most expensive nursing home.
It's very expensive daycare. Yes, it is. Assisted living with billions of dollars of underwriting. So Al from Texas, Al Green, gets up and brandishes his cane and disputes Trump's completely legitimate statement that he was elected by mandate, a mandate of the people, both in terms of the winning the Electoral College dramatically with 312 votes there, winning the popular vote, which is rarely has rarely been done by a Republican presidential victor, and of course sweeping the seven swing battleground states and picking up the votes of minorities and males in particular among those minorities, young males. So Al couldn't take it. He rose to his feet. It took him, I don't know, 30 seconds probably. And then he began brandishing his cane, a gold-tipped cane, of course. He probably was given to him.
A pimp, a cane.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, it a weapon of mass deception. And of course, Speaker Mike Johnson rose to his feet and demanded order in the chamber. Order in the chamber. And Al Green proceeded to ignore him and continued to stammer and the spittle was just flying. I'd hate to have been seated in front of him at that moment in time. But finally he was escorted out rather peacefully, I guess you could say, by members of the Sergeant-at-Arms staff and perhaps even Secret Service-type individuals who are now equipped to actually protect the president, unlike they were in the past. And Al was removed from the chamber, and then Donald Trump was allowed to continue as the Democrats sat with their arms folded and their faces scowling, and some of them with little signs like you use in an auction when you want to bid on something, except the signs, the little paddles had words on them, really searing things like lie.
So, Steve, we should get to the audio clip of Representative Green.
We have one, don't we?
Yes.
So let's go to cut one, Al Green.
The president said he had a mandate. And I was making it clear to the president that he has no mandate to cut Medicaid. I have people who are very fearful. These are poor people. And they have only Medicaid in their lives when it comes to their health care. And I want him to know that his budget calls for deep cuts in Medicaid. He needs to save Medicaid, protect it. We need to raise the cap on Social Security. There's a possibility that it's going to be hurt. And we've got to protect Medicare. These are the safety net programs that people in my congressional district depend on. And this president seems to care less about them and more about the number of people that he can remove from the various programs that have been so helpful to so many people.
I think what he's actually focused on, as well he should, and as well should all elected officials in Congress, is those who are gaming these safety net systems, those who are receiving Medicaid coverage who are ineligible, those who are receiving Social Security payments who have been dead for like 20 years. That is the focus. Mr. Green is delusional. And he was, by the way, on Thursday morning of this past week, censured by the U.S. House of Representatives.
So a couple things. First of all, if the leaders of your party, the poster children, if you will, of your party is a 82-year-old purple-haired, you know, lady who looks like a zombie. Al Green, a cane-waving 78-year-old man. And don't forget the vice chair, soy boy David Hogg, right? They've lost the Democrat parties. They're just swirling down the toilet. They're never going to get a male vote again. It doesn't matter. I don't care. Black, white, whatever. There's no male with measurable testosterone in their body who's ever going to vote for a Democrat again, right? And anybody Absolutely. With common sense. But, you know, look, these people are defending fraud, waste, and abuse. Because, you know, the greatest of all time, the GOAT President Trump, he's cutting fraud, waste, and abuse. And, you know, everyone's always said, oh, you can't balance the budget. You can't balance the budget because look at how much is spent on entitlements. You know, all this entitlement spending, that can't be cut by law. It's entitlement spending. No one ever asked how much fraud is there in that entitlement spending. And, you know, they pretty much come out and said there's trillions in fraud in Medicare and Medicaid. And I believe that. I mean, look at the fraudulent cases on Medicare and Medicaid that have been prosecuted, the ones we know about. You know, there's individual practices, like just like a couple doctors who've defrauded billions of dollars, just one practice.
Yes.
So
and it's really easy to do.
Right. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, if they cut out all the fraud, there's plenty of money to go around the fraud, waste, and abuse.
And let's hope they are undeterred going forward in doing that. And I don't care how much squealing there is from people like Al Green.
Yeah, but these cane-wielding bitter clingers, you know, they want a bitter cling to their fraud, waste, and abuse, because when they say my constituents, that's what he really means, is him and his buddies and all that money's going into their pockets.
Absolutely. And of course, we've seen how the pharmaceutical industry has directed funds to various individuals as well to keep the vaccine industrial complex rolling along, steamrolling along as it has been for years, and as we saw especially during the recent pandemic. But you know, the Democrats were so pathetic in appearance in the chamber the other night. Their unwillingness to applaud even basic feel good, you know, stories in the room, their willingness to acknowledge that yes, the tragedies that have been imposed on our innocence by illegal immigrants, that we do need to acknowledge the sorrow that has been caused to people like the family of Lakin Riley of Georgia, whose mother and sister were in the chamber as guests of the president. But the Democrats were so appallingly inhuman, I think I can say that the other night, about the other night, unhinged, delusional, that even MSNBC's panel, after the fact, had to acknowledge that, wow, this is not a good look for the Democrats at all. And in fact, one of the co-anchors, Simone Sanders, went after these silly little props that many of them were displaying. Let's go to cut two.
Say what they thank you, Simone.
Can we talk about it?
The bingo signs were killing me. I don't know who thought up the bingo signs, but they should be fired.
Michael, this is an indictment, in my opinion, on the Democratic leadership. I talked to a lot of members during they was texting. The staff were on my phones and they were calling. And I think the best way to describe it is the Democratic leadership said they didn't want disruptions and they wanted people to attend and bring a guest and they wanted, you know, a little business as usual, and we're fighting back in other ways. There is a palpable disgust, as Claire said, from not just the members, but their constituents. And it's like a pot, as someone described it to me, that's boiling and it's about to bubble over. If you do not allow the members a space to a release valve, it's going to bubble over. And this was the members didn't, the visuals are not taking back the House in 2026.
There you have it.
So I am so thankful that the leadership of the Democrats thought those little signs were a great idea, because never, ever, ever in the history of memes has there been such a great meme opportunity.
Yes.
As, you know, them hanging up those little signs. And boy, there's been tons of memes. I am forever thankful for that decision.
Yes, they have gone viral for all the wrong reasons if you're a Democrat. And, you know, it's almost too kind to just refer to them as Democrats. I mean, that's their official party affiliation.
Right,
but really, these are Marxists.
Marxists who've usurped the term Democrat.
Yeah.
That's exactly. So let me say this other thing about the reading the crowd. Right. And I'm not talking about the brainless wackos like the squad and stuff. But if you paid attention to the Democrats, you know, like Nancy Pelosi and other people, they were squirming in their seats. There were a lot of worried faces. And I saw some Democrat that were about to cry. So what I saw was anger. You know, a subset of the Democrats were angry. Mm-hmm. A subset of them were about to burst out into tears because they knew their gig was up, right? And then people like Nancy Pelosi, she was looking around like she just wanted to like crawl, dig a hole and bury herself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some of them wondered why they even showed up, because it would have probably been better just to stay away.
Trump curb stomped him. Yeah. I mean, he just showed they had no clothes. He curb stomped them and just left them there. And right. And by the way, that speech is a matter of historical record. And when he sat there and factually called out everything, I mean, he just crushed him.
Yeah, it was a soaring oratorical triumph like few we have seen in that chamber by a sitting president of the United States. So for as much as I'm, you know, willing to give the nod to these MSNBCers, that was Simone Sanders, and the other one that you heard from was Michael Steele, who, believe it or not, was once the chairman of the Republican National Committee and formerly a congressman from Maryland. But he's gone to the dark side many years ago, Michael Steele. But so that being said, the low point of the evening in terms of media post-coverage was delivered by this really miserable wretch of a person named Nicole Wallace, who has her own show on MSNBC for reasons that are unknown. She was once a Republican, I think, but she was drawn to the dark side as well. You'll recall there was a very memorable, certainly inspiring and also emotional moment in the gallery during Trump's address when he acknowledged a 13-year-old boy named DJ, not to be confused with Donald John as in Trump, but the little boy's name is DJ. He's a kid who is 13 years old now, has had multiple surgeries. I want to say something like a dozen surgeries to treat various iterations of brain cancer that have beleaguered his young life. He was in the gallery with his dad, and his spoken ambition for many years has been that he wants to become a member of the law enforcement community, become a police officer. And on this occasion, to acknowledge him and to celebrate his spirit and his unflappable demeanor in the face of these medical problems, he was presented an honorary badge as a member of the United States Secret Service by the head of the Secret Service. It was a really great moment. He hugged the guy, and the crowd was on its feet, except for the Democrats.
Right, correct.
They would not even applaud this young man.
Right,
and his triumph over brain cancer, at least so far. They sat on their hands or with their little signs.
Yes.
And Nicole Wallace of MSNBC, instead of at least acknowledging that this was one of the moments of the evening that we could all agree was memorable and positive and upbeat, what did Nicole have to say about it? Let's play clip three.
But I think this was a lesson in finding one thing that you let yourself feel. And I let myself feel joy about DJ. And I hope he's alive for another, 95 years, yeah. Right? And I hope he lives the life he wants to live. He wants to be a cop. He knows what he wants to do. And maybe when you have childhood cancer, that crystallizes for you. And I hope he has a long life as a law enforcement officer. But I hope he never has to defend the United States Capitol against Donald Trump supporters. And if he does, I hope he isn't one of the six who loses his life to suicide. And I hope he isn't one who has to testify against the people who carried out acts of seditious conspiracy and then live to see Donald Trump pardon those people.
So you asked how this former Republican became this raging, crazed leftist, right? I can answer that for you. The worms ate into her brain. She got the woke mind virus, and then that's how she thinks.
She sounds...
It's deranged.
Yeah, and you could say that...
And by the way, that's a hell of a butt.
Yeah.
I mean, she praises, oh, this is cute. I hope he lives for 95 years, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, gosh, I hope he doesn't get killed. I mean, crazy.
And by the way, I don't think she has any verifiable evidence that security officers, police officers in the house that day on January 6, 21, all went off and committed suicide, six of them. At least she didn't repeat the lie that four or five people were killed on January 6th. The only one killed on January 6th was an innocent, unarmed military veteran named Ashley Babbitt. But nonetheless, we need not dwell on Nicole Wallace and her ilk because, you know, after all, she's got like, you know, 12 viewers on MSNBC.
Right.
So it's not that big of a deal, but it was noteworthy of the depths to which she sunk. And, you know, that was a thought out comment. That was not something that she was doing off the cuff. She probably had that scripted by a team of unionized writers as well. Nonetheless, what we will take away from Trump's address was about 100 minutes of just, you know, relishing all that has been done so far, just in a short amount of time since he was inaugurated on 20 January. Let's share with you a couple of the highlights from Donald Trump's speech. Let's play clips 4 through 6.
And we have ended weaponized government where, as an example, a sitting president is allowed to viciously prosecute his political opponent, like me. How did that work out? And I have stopped all government censorship and brought back free speech in America. And 2 days ago, I signed an order making English the official language of the United States of America. The media and our friends in the Democrat Party kept saying we needed new legislation. We must have legislation to secure the border. But it turned out that all we really needed was a new president. And our message to every child in America is that you are perfect exactly the way God made you.
Thank you, President Trump, for especially the last comment. Let's put an end to this transgenderism lunacy that has been sweeping our schools, our corporations, our law enforcement, our military, our commercial aviation. Let's celebrate two genders and celebrate being creations of our maker. And that's a really very simple and very common sense way to go about our lives as Americans. Well, we all, I think, everybody was abuzz about the speech on Tuesday night of last week, but you might have missed a few other things because we keep up on those on the highlights because you can't follow everything, especially if you have any semblance of a life. You know, unlike some of us who are just absorbed in consumption of news and analysis, but we do it so you don't have to. We saw another pathetic group of Democrats come into Capitol Hill on Wednesday of this past week. There wasn't a room full of them. There were just four of them. They were mayors, however, so not just people off the street. The mayors of Boston, Chicago, Denver, and New York, all places that have become somewhat uninhabitable due to their left-wing Marxist policies. In particular, they were ordered before the House Oversight Committee, chaired by James Comer of Kentucky and the mask-wearing Virginia Democrat Gerald Conley. He was actually wearing a mask during the hearing.
That's crazy.
From the 11th District, which is Fairfax County, which is the D.C. area.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
But these mayors were called before this committee, and they were asked to you know, explain why they have failed to address the illegal immigration scourge that has made their cities dangerous, crime-ridden, and, as I said, nearly uninhabitable.
So, Mr. Mask Wearer, Congressman Wright from Fairfax County, wait until they shut down the Department of Education and all those crazed leftists that work at the Department of Education leave and go back to wherever they came from, probably Boston or Baltimore, then maybe Mr. Face Diaper won't get reelected when all the former, you know, 90%+ of federal workers vote Democrat, right? Mm-hmm. Trump gets rid, fires 2/3 of the federal workers. Maybe Virginia will turn Republican again when all those people move back to, you know, liberal land.
Well, you're already seeing the D.C. area real estate market is taking a hit as they're fleeing like rats from a sinking ship. And you can be sure that it won't be long before these ultra high net worth zip codes in places like Fairfax County, among the highest in the nation, there will soon be a mass exodus as the gig will be up, as they say. So here are the mayors from Boston, Madam Wu, I think her name is, from Chicago, Johnson, from Denver, John Stun, and from New York, Eric Adams. New York City, the city so great they named it, the city so nice they named it twice. No longer is that true. They were asked some very specific questions by members of this House committee as to why they have failed to cooperate in the apprehension of these illegal immigrants in their city, what they have spent on in terms of taxpayer dollars on aiding and abetting and lodging these people into the billions of dollars. Two of the mayors couldn't answer the question, by the way. And then they came face-to-face with the buzzsaw, who is Florida Representative Anna Paulina Luna. She not only had some pretty stern things to say to them about their ineptitude as mayors, but she hit them with a little surprise development. Let's play clip 7.
To me, after this line of questioning, it's very clear that these policies that you have all implicated are active and alive and well in your cities are in direct violation with U.S. Title 8, Code Subsection 1324, and is a federal offense. But you all speak about a broken immigration system, and yet here you guys are aiding and abetting in that entire process. I want to be very clear about something. Open border policies, which is something that you guys are talking about, hurts people on both sides, meaning the people that are coming here illegally and then American citizens as well. I do not think you guys are bad people, but I think that you are ideologically misled, which is why, unfortunately, based on your responses, I'm all going to be criminally referring you to the Department of Justice for investigation. And as soon as I leave here, these will be going over to Pam Bondi.
So a couple observations. One is I do have to take a slight disagreement with Representative Luna because I do think they are bad people.
Yes,
I mean, take Mayor Wu, who came out. There was an officer-involved shooting where a Boston officer shot and killed a criminal, and she came out and apologized to the criminal. So yeah. I, unlike Representative Luna, do think that those four mayors are bad people.
Yeah, I think they're rotten to the core, and especially Wu also made a point of saying that they never ask anyone about their immigration status in Boston.
Right, just like Moore County schools. You know, if you ask, then you might get charged with harboring a, you know, illegal alien or something.
I mean, you know, that's a far cry from, you know, Boston's a very provincial town. And I mean, there was a time when you had to, you know, you had to prove that you were not from New Hampshire or Vermont. They'd get worried about that, as you know, but now that's all off the table. So, you know, you would think, well, these members of the committee, they, you know, they're speaking in broad generalities about the scourge of these illegal immigrants in these cities. What actual proof do they have that these kind of individuals are roaming the streets? Well, you know what? They do have some proof. Ohio Representative Jim Jordan, one of the most staunch conservative Republicans on the Hill, took the Denver mayor to task on a specific case, which is so egregious so as not to be believed. Let's go to Jim Jordan, clip 8.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor Johnston, who's Abraham Gonzalez?
Thank you, Congressman. He is a individual that was released from the county jail on Friday in the city and county of Denver.
That's all you know about him?
I do know that he was facing charges that the
Venezuelan gang member arrested by Border Patrol on September 20th, 2023, released into the country by the Biden administration. A few months later, he's arrested in your city, charged with aggravated assault. On March 11th, 2024, he's charged with motor vehicle theft, stole a car. And then on March 20th, 2024, Mr. Gonzalez is charged with felony menacing. 6 days after that last charge, I send you a detainer, which includes an administrative warrant. Basically, it says if you're going to release this bad guy, this gang member who allegedly stole a car, menaced people, and assaulted people, give us a 48-hour heads up. Is that right? That refresh your memory?
I do know about the detainer request. I do know that we provided a notification of release.
What kind of notice did you give ICE when you released him?
We gave him notification. I'm not sure how long in advance it was.
One hour notice, and you released him 5 days ago, right? Why not give him more heads up? Let's put the slide up. Let's see what it says here. Let's put the slide up. This is what the Denver Sheriff's Department, it's kind of hard to see, so I'll read it. It says, Denver Sheriff Department, ICE notification being released to the streets. I simply said, we want just release him to us. You release him to the streets. Why not release him to ICE?
Thank you. What we've done, and we do this regularly, we've done 1,226 of these, is we notify
ICE. I'm asking about one. I'm not asking about the 1,200. I'm asking about Mr. Abraham Gonzalez, who's a gang member from Venezuela, stole a car, assaulted someone. You had him in your custody for how long?
I know that we released
345 days you had him in custody. And I said, hey, can you give us 48 hours heads up?
That guy, can you imagine having a mayor that blatantly a criminal in his behavior? I mean, aiding and abetting these people in a city like Denver. And by the way, this is the same scumbag who, not wanting to soil up his pristine city of Denver, allowed many of these illegal immigrants to be sort of in the dead of night shifted over to the adjoining suburb of Aurora, where you may recall seeing images of apartment buildings being completely overrun by these Venezuelan gang members, literally to the point where they turned them into their own little havens of drug abuse and rape and whatever else you could imagine.
So, you know, as I said, these are bad people, right? And if you listen closely, they talked about this one dude they talked about stole a car and assaulted people. It's their policies. Everyone's been complaining about insurance rates going up. Well, gee, I wonder why, you know? And also crime rates, crazy, you know? So it's these policies of these liberals that's resulted in increase in insurance rates, inability to get insurance, and the increase in or decrease in public safety.
Yeah. Let's shift away from the scumbags in elected office, and let's turn to equally scumified people in the media. One of the highlights of the past week was ABC News announcing that it was going to lay off close to 200 people in its news division and other properties. It's going to shut down this terrible 538 data-driven polling operation, which is fiction at best when it comes to giving you insight into election directions, particularly in the last race for president between Biden and Trump. Well, Harris, Biden, and Trump. But guess what? They didn't go far enough at ABC News. They didn't fire any of the co-hosts of The View. Which would have been,
isn't that
to me,
crazy?
If you're going to drop the hammer, man, that's the one that's got to go. I guess people still watch the show. I have no idea. But The View decided to maybe go a little bit out of its comfort zone this past week. And they invited on their program a young man named Stephen A. Smith, who has really morphed from a sports commentator with ESPN into more of a cultural commentator. He has wide range of breadth and depth in various subject matters, cultural, political, and sports. They invited him on. He's a black male, probably I would say around 50 years old. He's been around a while. He comes on, and Joy Behar launches into a tirade about her disdain for Donald Trump, who she has spoken ill of many, many times on the program. And then she throws it to Stephen A. Smith, who says, well, you know, I'm not a big Trump guy, but let's play clip 9.
Well, it is a mandate, and I'm going to explain why. And I don't mind the question, but let me be very clear. I'm no supporter of Trump. I'm a supporter of truth and the facts. And here's the facts. The man won every swing state. He increased in terms of his voter turnout in his favor from the standpoint of blacks, Latinos, and young voters. He increased his numbers in that regard from 2020. 89% of the counties shifted to the right. That's a mandate. We can sit up there and play around all we want to. In 2020, Trump didn't win the popular vote. He didn't win the Electoral College vote. A matter of fact, the Republicans hadn't won the popular vote, if I remember correctly, since 2004. Yeah. But they did this year. So 20 years after they last won a popular vote, they won the popular vote. They won the Electoral College vote. The man won every swing state. And on top of it, 89% of the counties shifted against. I don't understand how people can look at that and say, there's no mandate. There's a mandate.
Well, that was good.
So that man is right. It is not only the mandate has turned into a tsunami, which has turned into a destruction of the bureaucratic state. And by the way, let's talk about everyone looks up to the federal government and says, yes, destroy the bureaucrat state, destroy the bureaucrat state. How about locally in North Carolina? We destroy the bureaucratic state. That in spite of increasingly huge amounts of money, can't even get our DMV offices to work, right? So we need to crush the bureaucratic state at the state level and at the county level.
Absolutely.
Let's look at Sand Hills Community College and the bureaucratic state there. We need to take a harder look at Moore County schools and the bureaucrat state. We need to dismember the bureaucratic state everywhere it exists at all levels.
Well, I believe there will be a trickle down effect. If we can see, dominance of conservatism at the federal level, I believe it will embolden people at the grassroots. I certainly, the two of us sitting at this table don't need to be emboldened, but we need more of us.
We need to clone ourselves.
If I may be a little bit immodest, but
you
that's
know what?
Okay.
If they can clone my cat, they can clone you, Steve.
Well, that would be a marvel of science, which has perhaps not been fully comprehended or contemplated.
You know, if there was like 500 of you, imagine how happy the guy at the gentleman's store there in Pinehurst would be.
Right.
He could expand.
Well, except when I walk in, it ceases to be gentlemanly. But anyway, that's another story. You know, we mentioned the fraudulent poll operation 538, which ABC News has shut down. But there is a very robust organization called Rasmussen Reports. Actually, its founder, Scott Rasmussen, is no longer affiliated, but it continues to chug along as one of the very credible go-tos for gauging public sentiment. And it's actually, I would say, more useful, you know, once elections are over and you start looking at some of these other touch points of how the public is feeling, how they're reacting to policies and so on and so forth. Mark Mitchell, who is their lead pollster and a virulent conservative as well, pointed out a couple of data points in their latest surveying over the past week. Their latest right track, wrong track, which is one of their best known survey questions, you know, is the country on the right track or the wrong track? Right now, you've got 45% of those in their survey saying the country is on the right track. And you might say, well, that's not very good, is it? It's less than half. Well, if you contrast that with those tracking numbers when Biden was so-called president, I mean, it was in the single digits in some cases. So now we're up to 45%. That's a rebound of epic proportions. 59% of those surveyed agree with the Trump administration and with Doge and Elon Musk, that our federal budget is completely full of being devastated by fraud, waste, and abuse. 59%. Anytime you get over 50% on anything in this country, then you know that that you're seeing a breakthrough. And right now, after his first full month, give or take, in office as the 47th president, Trump has a 51% approval rating, which, again, historically, presidents to be over 50%, you know, under rare circumstances does that happen. FDR, during the war, George Bush immediately after Operation Desert Storm, a few blips on the screen, but it's very rare. Mark Mitchell, however, is also not only just a person who regurgitates numbers, he's able to take all this data and consolidated into some very coherent observances. Let's hear what Mark Mitchell had to say. Clip 10.
Rattle off a couple of numbers here about what this election was really about. This is from September. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Only 37% say yes. Will today's children be better off than their parents? Only 22% say yes. 34% of 18 to 29-year-olds. Is America safer than it was 4 years ago? Only 27% say yes. And so they can talk all they want to about Trump approval, which, by the way, is 51% today. It's probably going to stay there the rest of his term because people know who Trump is. They talk about Trump approval because they're trying to drag it down with yet another psychological operation. But the fact is, what they haven't mentioned is that right direction of the country just hit a record last week, 48%, the highest in our entire polling history. And every single component of Trump's platform is more popular than he is. Massive deportations, way more popular than Trump is, right? Holding government accountable, way more popular than Trump is. So they can sit there, and I'll tell you, the optics are horrible. Trump did a really great job just literally rubbing their nose in their own crap, the crap that they forced on America.
Couldn't have said that any better.
Yeah, hence the what I said, if you analyze the audience on the Democrat during the State of the Union, I mean, there were a lot of nervous looking people. People were about to burst into tears. People, like I said, Nancy Pelosi looked like she wanted, she wasn't the only one, looked like she wanted to dig a hole and bury herself.
I think some of them were speed dialing their favorite drug dealer, Hunter Biden, too.
Yes, to get
a quick hit. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, one of the most tangible exhibits of the change that has swept over our country since Trump was elected and ultimately inaugurated is what's going on or not going on any longer at the southern border, which is an invasion. And one of the experts on that that four-year story under Biden is a gentleman named Todd Benzman of the Center for Immigration Studies, who spent a lot of time at the border and on the Mexico side of the border. He wrote an excellent book on what he observed called Overrun. But guess what? The title of his book is quickly becoming obsolete, because in a very short time, with the assistance of the U.S. military and a reinvigorated border patrol, the invasion at the southern border has essentially come to an end. Todd Benzman, in fact, has declared that the worst mass migration crisis in the history of the world is over. Let's go to clip 11.
Premier expert on the southern border invasion. Todd, in the last month of Biden's regime, how many people on average were crossing the southern border? And now what have we seen over the last 30 days?
Right. We've seen the numbers drop from the last month Biden administration by 2/3 just through January. And now it's down by another 2/3 to for February, 8,326 illegal crossings that of apprehensions. All of those people have been detained and expelled or are being expelled right now. None of them are being released. That number, according to Mike Banks, the new chief of Border Patrol, is the lowest number in U.S. recorded history. Just to give you an idea, 8,000 may sound like a lot to the uninitiated, but in December of 2023, which was the height of the whole thing, if you include the parolees that they were letting fly in and cross in over the land ports plus illegal immigrants, it was close to 400,000. So that's the night and day. I mean, that's a kind of a norm, an unbelievable norm, 8,000 a day. I hope that they can maintain that. If they do, we'll have the lowest year of illegal immigration on record.
And, you know, not only does that just portend great things for our border states, but it also will take the heat off of a lot of these urban centers that have been overrun by these people being bused and flown in. We saw the story just in the past week of the detainment of a illegal in Fayetteville who committed a triple murder, and he had been flown in here you know, on one of those overnight Biden, you know, express flights, and now there are three innocent people who are no longer in Fayetteville.
And it's the Democrat, make no mistake about it. It was the elected Democrat officials and their cabinet and their supporters who did all this. And just as was said the other night, all we really needed was a new president. Because this was all intentional. It was all intentionally done by the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party needs to be destroyed. Because they tried to destroy our country.
They did. And it started with Obama, you know, 15 years ago. And all we really needed was not just a new president, but a new president who's coherent, who has energy, who doesn't need to sleep till 10 o'clock every morning, and so on and so forth. Let us move forward to the week ahead. We will devote our final segment in the minutes we have remaining to looking ahead. Just a couple of quick ones I want to hit on. March 12th, Josh Stein, our Democrat governor, will be giving his first State of the State address as governor. That will be on March 12th. Also, you can expect to see the taking down of the Black Lives Matter Plaza in Washington, D.C., beginning as soon as the coming week.
You know, wasn't it silly that we did all that? Why did we allow all this stuff to happen? Oh, wait, once again, it goes back to the radical, crazed Democrat elected officials, their cabinet, and those who supported them. The same people that had, how many crossings was that a month? 400,000 crossings.
400,000.
Crossings a month, some of which, most of which were sanctioned. The same people who brought you that, brought you LGBTQ flags painted on roads that if you like drove across, they would haul you to prison. They have giant, like 40-foot letters, Black Lives Matter, painted on roads. All this insanity brought to us by the Democrat Party, led by the purple-haired 82-year-old lady who looks like a troll, and the cane-wielding 78-year-old person, and David Hogg, their you know, soy boy.
You're talking Nancy Pelosi? Yeah. She's got a new hip, though, so one thing on her is not 82 anymore, so that's...
And, you know, we also learned that, you know, the vast majority of this was kept afloat by funneling billions, untold billions, hundreds of billions of dollars through grants and stuff into all these leftist organizations.
Absolutely. It is truly criminal. That's not just
on a local level. You know, the High Falls Dam that the people are desperately trying to save. I did some research last week on that Data Republican site. And wouldn't you know, an organization called American River Rivers Inc. is getting tens of millions of dollars from the federal government to go around and get all these dams removed. It's literally local things that local people are opposed to are getting funded by the federal government in these grants.
And that's going to stop, I hope, pretty soon, if not ASAP. Also coming up in the week ahead, you can expect to see the two astronauts, NASA astronauts, who've been stranded at a space station since June, thank you, Biden regime, they're going to be reunited with a couple of incoming astronaut researchers who are going to be jetting in, not on the Boeing Starliner, but on Elon Musk's SpaceX Dragon spaceship. And then after a couple of days of transition, our two stranded NASA astronauts will be flown back to Earth. After 9 months, they went for a week and they stayed for 9 months.
It's like they should have named the Boeing Starship, should have been called the SS Minnow.
So, yeah, exactly. Well, maybe they'll do some remarketing at Boeing. I mean, they can't even, you know, they're talk about a brand that has just shot itself in the foot multiple times.
You know, it used to be, if it's not Boeing, I'm not going.
Yeah,
now it's, if it's Boeing, I'm not going.
That's right.
I mean, Boeing used to dominate. Here's the interesting thing about Boeing. Boeing, no kidding, in the mid-90s, they got caught red-handed bribing the lead acquisition official for the United States Air Force on a tanker contract, and caught red-handed. she gave the contract to Boeing, then that contract was undone and it was given to a neutral third party who went through the whole thing again. And that person gave the contract to Airbus. And John McCain, good old crooked John McCain, called that contracting officer forward, lambasted her for doing that, basically undid. John McCain had that contract undone and reawarded to Boeing, who didn't deserve it. And then Boeing has, if they would have been held accountable then they wouldn't have led to the 737 MAX and loss of lives. Boeing is a great example of how government corruption, corporate corruption, left unchecked, leads to the destruction of the company and loss of lives. If they'd have been disciplined when they got caught 30 years ago, Boeing would still be a good company today.
Speaking of fiscal discipline, David, I believe the Moore County Board of Education will be meeting in the week ahead.
Yes, we will.
And I believe you have a special entree to that as a member of the Board of Education.
I do. There's
twice elected, I might add.
Yes, I'm the ranking member on the school board.
Exactly.
Yes.
What can we expect coming out of the school board when it meets this coming week? Any bombshells or fireworks? Or
well, we're going to get a report on the advanced teaching roles. Because I don't believe the central office was quite as forthcoming as to how they're going to pay for these pay raises for our advanced teaching roles, because the school board and the public was led to believe that these grants from the state was going to pay the raises forever. But a careful reading of the law shows no, that those are just a 3-year grant. So, you know, before we approve this next budget, I want to know, okay, how much are we committed to on these raises, and what's the plan to fund them? Because in the work session, we were told they're going to fund those raises through larger class sizes. And I'm here to tell you, I'm not going to support pay raises by increasing class sizes. If we need to give pay raises, that's great, but we're not going to do it by increasing class sizes.
Isn't class size one of the leading indicators of outcomes for children in terms of how they perform and how they learn? You want to limit class size.
I believe that the Moore County public and I believe the school board wants smaller class sizes, not larger class sizes, is what I believe.
That seems to be the
But I don't believe the central office was quite forthcoming about how these raises were going to be funded. So we're going to get a little report on that. And then also, you know, of course, the Innovative High School, Steve, we're intertwined on that one.
Yes, we are. The Innovative High School, which is proposed to be built on the campus of Sandhills Community College, seeded with $25 million, brought forward by Senator Tom McInnes and Neil Jackson, I believe last year. And now there has been finally a meeting of all the the parties.
Well, except the school board at large wasn't invited; just the chair and vice chair.
The chair and vice chair, along with the county commissioners and the president of Sandhills Community College.
Were the county commissioners invited? Or
yes,
just,
they were.
Okay, how many attended?
I know Chairman Paserno and I believe Jim Von Cannon attended.
Okay,
I hope they all attended.
Yeah,
but the bottom line is that there still seems to be an unwillingness to talk seriously about the additional funding that will be needed to complete this project.
No one knows how they're going to pay for this.
There seems to be this thought that it's going to come like manna from heaven.
The school board keeps voting for this. I keep voting against it for several reasons, but you know, one of which is no one can tell us how much this is going to cost. They're building a high school for 270 students. We need to build a 1,500-seat high school. And that's going to be about $120 million. Instead, they're taking $40 million and they're building a high school for 270 students. Just on the math alone, it doesn't work.
Well, we'll be keeping an
eye
on it.
Plus, they haven't even told us how much it's going to cost.
No idea.
No idea.
No idea. There is some architectural pricing being done right now, but that's about it.
But by God, it's starting next fall. Next fall, it's starting, even though today, this week, we're going to be voting on the school mascot and the colors on a high school that's opening in the fall. They can't even tell us what it's going to cost to build it.
Well, I certainly hope a politically correct mascot name is selected.
The Red Wolf.
By the who?
The Red Wolf.
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 Okay.
The Red Wolf.
Well, let's go barking out the door on that one. We, of course, want to thank you for joining us once again. And we will look forward to returning next week, every Saturday at 11 o'clock, where we will be David Hensley and Steve Woodward.
Taking aim.
Taking aim.